Ik ben Ferdi Mengi en ik ben van België. En ik reis met Rick Steves. Now, that was Flemish, and it means I am Ferdi Mengi from Belgium, and I travel with Rick Steves. Ik ben Ferdi Mengi en ik ben van België en ik reis met Rick Steves.
It used to be how some of the poorest Londoners found stuff to sell just to get by. Today, mudlarking is a popular way to explore the history London's buried along the banks of the River Thames. Roman hairpins, medieval buttons, 18th century coins, they're all nestled in the mud, waiting to be found when the tide goes out. Laura Maclam is a licensed mudlarker. She's spent more than 15 years training her eyes to find artifacts along the Thames. Her book, Mudlark, In Search of London's Past Along the River Thames, explains how nearly every item you find can tell a piece of British history. Laura joins us from her home base in London.
Thank you for inviting me, Rick.
I just love the thought of, you know, going to London and realizing you got a whole new dimension just slopping through the muck at low tide on the Thames. Talk a little bit about how the Thames is actually a tidal river. I think a lot of people don't even realize that when they're in London.
It is, yes. The Thames is a tidal river from Teddington out to the estuary. And a lot of people think about the Thames as just that wiggly bit that goes through central London. But actually, it's a river that is a completely different beast at the beginning of the tidal Thames at Teddington. It's very almost countrified and bucolic out to the estuary where it's just wild and windy and windswept. It's just the most beautiful place. And yes, the river goes up and down twice every 24 hours.
Okay, and so much history. There's so much history of England that's been just, in a lot of ways, the Thames has been the lifeblood of that. And people, you know, comb through the rocks and the mud to find bits of that history. Give us just a little background. What is mudlarking historically? And then you even have a mudlarking society today with a popular Facebook page. Tell us just the context of beachcombing on the Thames.
Yes, I mean, London's really only where it is because of the River Thames. And there is 2,000 years or more of history that's been thrown and lost in the river. And so, as I say, it's a tidal Thames, and twice a day, every 24 hours, the river falls low enough for us to get onto the foreshore, which is the riverbed. And you get a chance to go down there and start to search for these objects that have been lost and found. And every tide reveals new treasures. It's constantly eroding. The mud is constantly revealing new objects. And you never, never know what you're going to find. So you could find a prehistoric flint lying next to a Victorian coin, or a medieval buckle lying next to, say, a Roman hairpin. And it's the most fantastic place to go.
You know, it's interesting when you say that the tide replenishes the beachcombing opportunities, because I couldn't figure that out. Years ago, a guide took me beachcombing on the Thames at low tide in London, and I was walking through the little pebbles, and I found these white tubes. They looked like insulation tubes from the 1960s or something like that. And he told me, no, those are Victorian pipe stems. And I realized these are historic. You know, Charles Dickens could have sucked on one of these things. And I realized, why is all of this historic stuff in the rocks today? And if I come back in 2 months, it's going to be there again. And every time I walk down those steps when I'm in London to get down to the beach, I find there's all of these historic tiles and these historic stems of pipes. And that's just the easy stuff to find. But I didn't realize it's actually replenished by the tide. Is that right?
That's right. I mean, some of it's washing in from further out, but a lot of it is actually in the mud. They use domestic refuse and rubbish to build up the foreshore, particularly in central London, because it was a working environment. They needed, in its natural state, a river is a V-shape. And so they needed it to be flat next to the river wall so they could the barges could rest on it at low tide and they could unload the contents. And so they used all this rubbish to build up the foreshore, and it's slowly being eroded because nobody's looking after the foreshore anymore. It used to be mended, and the revetments, the walls that contain all this rubbish, were fixed. And these days it's all falling apart, and the river is actually quite busy. There's quite a lot of river traffic on it. And as they go past, the waves are eating away at the mud.
So this is a new word for me, foreshore. We've got the embankment. And is the foreshore area the flat area at the bottom of the embankment?
The foreshore is effectively the riverbed. It's the muddy bit at the bottom of the river wall.
Okay, now mudlark, that has it's a name that goes back to Dickensian times, right? Mudlarking was something people did a long time ago.
It is. The very first reference I found dates back to the end of the 1700s. And they were talking about these gangs of river workers. Some of them were thieves. They were going on board the ships and they were throwing objects off. And it was the mudlarks searching around in the mud that were picking up these.
People in big third world countries, capitals, they mudlark through the garbage dumps to scavenge. And it's a whole industry. And in poverty-stricken England 200 years ago, people would scavenge on the riverbanks for things, and where they find rags and rope and things to sell. Today, there's actually it's a hobby. You're part of a mudlarking society. Tell us a bit about that.
It is. I mean, the Victorian mudlarks were looking for anything they could sell or eat or use just to keep themselves alive. And today we're really lucky. We do it. Modern day mudlarks just do it because for our interest in history. And there is a Mudlark Society. I'm not actually a member of the Mudlark Society, but there are, I think, about 1,500 active permits at the moment. Mm. So it's a hobby that's increasing in popularity. So more and more people are going down there to do it.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're mudlarking right now with Laura Maitland. And Laura's been scanning the River Thames for 15 years, finding artifacts dating back as far as the 11th century. Her book is called Mudlark, In Search of London's Past Along the River Thames. And in the book, she describes the fun she's had beachcombing in London. Laura, in your book, you call the Thames England's longest archaeological landscape. Tell me a little more about how it's an archaeological landscape.
It's an archaeological landscape in as much as you can search the tidal Thames from one end at Teddington right out to the estuary. And, you know, human beings have left their mark all the way along it. It's one of the world's busiest rivers and has been, you know, historically. So there is stuff to find all the way down it. And it varies depending what was going on nearby.
What do you look for and where are the best places? I would imagine like in front of the Tower of London, you might find there's a water gate there. People must have spilled things into the mud when they were loading treasures in and out of the Tower of London.
There is. Actually, the bit of foreshore in front of the Tower of London is a protected area. It's a scheduled monument, so nobody's allowed down there to search. There are several scheduled monuments along the Thames that are protected as Stonehenge, actually. So you have to be very careful there and not search and not take anything away.
Where's your favorite place to mudlark?
Do you know what? It depends what mood I'm in, to be honest. You do find the richest variety of things in central London, obviously. You're going to find things where there were more people. But then when you go out to Wapping, then you start finding things that are associated with shipbuilding and trade from the 18th century. And then you get out into the estuary, and that's where the Romans had their kilns. So you're finding Roman pottery. It's amazing.
And the wonderful thing is you'd think if you're beachcombing, you want to be first. But because of the blessing of the tides, it's not who's there first. It's always replenished with every tide. So you can go to the same place week after week and still find new treasures.
New things turn up on every tide. And the funny thing is that someone can walk along in front of you and they'll be looking, they've got different eyes. They'll be seeing different things and they'll miss things. So it's really worth, you know, if you see people down there, don't just assume they found everything because they won't have found everything, I can guarantee.
In fact, you wrote, Mother Nature rarely makes perfect straight lines or circles. And as the eye becomes more practiced, imperfections and patterns start to stand out. So you've actually trained your eyes. And if I was to walk down a stretch of the beach and if you were to walk down the stretch of the beach, because you know what to look for, you'd find different things than me. Give us a little insight into that.
Yes. I've been doing it for over 15 years now. And you learn to read the foreshore. You know, you learn to where things are likely to wash up. They wash up against posts and in dips, and coins tend to stick to the surface of the sand. And we at mudlarks call it getting your eye in. And you learn to spot perfect circles and straight lines because nature doesn't make perfect circles and straight lines. And that's what really starts to stand out when you get your eye in.
So let's talk nitty gritty here. First of all, is permission required? Can any old tourist go down there and legally do a little beachcombing? What do we need to know in that regard?
Yes, you most definitely do need permission to do it. You need a permit from the Port of London Authority.
I've been breaking the law when I do it.
Well, when did you do it? Because they really tightened up on this in 2016. So if you did it before then, you could probably be all right.
I'm going to do it next time I'm in London, and I don't think I'm going to get permission. What will happen?
Oh, Well, you should get permission, because if you're mudlarking without permission, you're breaking the law. So, yes.
That's probably so serious. I think I was joking there, but you don't want to do that.
Well, so you don't want to do that.
Are there tours? I mean, do they actually have guides that'll take you down to the riverbanks?
There are very few people have got permission to do tours, but there are a couple that I recommend. It's the Thames Explorer Trust and Thames Discovery, and they're both non-profit organizations. Thames Discovery, good. They're recording all the larger archaeological objects along the foreshore, and Thames Explorer is all about education. So it's great. The money you pay goes straight back into the fantastic work they do on the river.
Well, that's beautiful. And I would suppose if you take the tour, you're an honorary guest. You don't need to worry about getting arrested.
You don't have to worry about being arrested. You don't need a permit, because you can use their permit. The only thing is you can't take away the things that you find, but you will have a fantastic guide. They'll tell you how to look and where to look, and tell you what you're finding as well. So it's really worth doing.
Licensed mudlark Lara Makelam is our guest from London on today's Travel with Rick Steves. Lara has been scanning the shores of the River Thames at low tide without a metal detector or digging for years. In the U.S. and Canada, her best-selling book is called Mudlark. And in Britain, it's Mudlarking, Lost and Found on the River Thames. Since we recorded our interview, Lara has also written A Field Guide to Larking, Beachcombing, Mudlarking, Field Walking, and More. She shares her finds on Facebook at London Mudlark. I love this passage from your book, Lara. You write, "There, lying next to the eroding barge bed, as if it had just been dropped by a passerby, was a clunky copper coin dated 1797 with the arrogant head of George III looking remarkably composed in the mud." There's so much history you can find. When I was in the beachcombing moment with one of my London guides, he was explaining how you pick up these tiles and it actually tells a story about the Great Fire back in 1666, how London was getting away from one kind of roof that required more timbers because it was a bigger fire risk and timbers needed to be used for the Royal Navy. And they were getting lighter tiles, and all the old heavy tiles were tossed into the river. And centuries later, we see them in our sightseeing. Tell a little bit about that. For example, the history you can read into the tiles that you find.
Well, there are loads and loads of roof tiles down there. You get the roof tiles with the round peg holes, and those are the ones that were held on by the wooden pegs. So those tend to predate the Great Fire, because after the Great Fire, they were being held on by nails, and they had more of a rough, square, stabbed hole. You get the tiles that have got animal paw prints across them, and I love those, because those are just a moment captured in time, that moment when maybe a cat ran across the tile, followed by a dog in the tile maker's yard. And you can just imagine the scene, can't you?
Oh, that's beautiful.
And what I love about the things that I find, they're just the ordinary things like roof tiles that tell these incredible stories about the past.
We got to remember also, London goes all the way back to ancient Roman times when it was called Londinium. What's your experience with finding artifacts that actually go back to Roman times?
It's surprisingly easy to find Roman objects, actually, depending where you are. There's one spot in particular at the moment, and quite a lot of nice Roman objects are washing out. I've found Roman hairpins and game counters and obviously coins. And I've even got when you have a sword and you have the scabbard that the sword goes into, there's always a hard bit on the end called a chape. I've got an ivory chape from the end of a Roman auxiliary soldier's sword,
well,
which is quite incredible.
That is something that's quite remarkable for an American. I'm a coin collector, and I can buy a Roman coin at an antique shop anywhere in England much cheaper than I can buy what we call an Indian head penny here in the United States. And that Indian head penny is just 120 years old, where this Roman coin is 2,000 years old. There were a lot of little Roman pennies tossed around back then.
There were. The Romans obviously built the very first London Bridge, and it said that there was a shrine partway across, and that they were just flicking pennies into the river, maybe as a thanks for a safe return, or possibly, you know, sort of to appease the gods. And when they pulled down the old London Bridge, the medieval bridge, there were so many Roman coins they were dredging up. They were dredging them up by the bucketful. So there's a lot of Roman coins. There's a lot of Roman coins in England. I think the Romans were very good at losing small denomination coins. We do find a lot of them.
You could spend a penny 2,000 years ago in Londinium.
Yes.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Laura Maclem, and her book is Mudlark, In Search of London's Past Along the River Thames. We're beachcombing in London. And I love the thought that coins were not just something you would go to the store and buy something with, but they could be used decoratively on chains and pendants. And you write about how you found a lot of coins that were love tokens or decorative as a sort of a second life as a coin that ended up in the Thames. And you also talk at length about how, you know, in your beachcombing or mudlarking, you find that one man's trash is a historian's treasure, and you find all sorts of examples of unhappiness, curses, and prayers, and happiness like wedding rings, or sadness, a wedding ring that might have been thrown back into the river in a very sad day. Talk a little bit about the emotions of beachcombing in London.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the Thames runs through one of the busiest cities in the world. And there's something about moving water. I think it takes your troubles away. I mean, I talk to the river as I mudlark. It knows more about me than probably anybody else. And there's something about the fact that it's moving. It's taking your troubles away. And people do go to it to throw things away that they don't want. So sometimes it can feel incredibly intrusive. I've found torn up photographs and love letters, wedding rings, as you said. People think that they're throwing things into the river and they'll never see them again. And what they don't think about are the mudlarks at low tide poking around, finding
them
again.
And they can end up in a museum. You may not be able to see all of these on your quick visit to London or the Thames, but you can go to museums. And I forget the museum, but there was a bunch of drawers I could pull out and see, you know, rack after rack of things that were found mudlarking. Do you recall a museum in London that has a good collection of treasures from the riverbank?
The best museum to go to is the Museum of London. A lot of what they have there is stuff that's been found in the river, simply because the objects that we find in the river are so well preserved. So they're often the best examples.
Are they collected as things dug up on the Thames, or is it just scattered through different artifact displays that you wouldn't know they were found beachcombing?
They often put in the notes for the object, it says where it was found, and it'll say found on the Thames.
Laura, for 15 years, you've been beachcombing the Thames. Let's just finish with, I'm curious, is there a particular find that just resonates with you? What would you have from all the hours you've spent beachcombing that's on a shelf or on a wall in a special place in your home?
Everybody asks me this, and I've found thousands of things over the years, but probably the object that is most precious to me is a Tudor shoe. It's 16th century, and it's a child's shoe. It probably would have fitted my son when he was about five. When I found it and I pulled it out of the mud, it was in absolute perfect condition, as if it had dropped off someone's foot yesterday. And inside, you could see the little toe prints and the little heel mark from where the last owner was wearing it, and the lines across the top. And I think shoes are just so personal, and it's really that I love about mudlarking, that reaching back through into history and literally touching the past, and there's nothing like a shoe for that.
England has such a rich and fascinating history, and it's really quite exciting to think that it is remarkably preserved in the mud of the Thames. And if you know where to look and what to look for, you can resurrect that story even as a visitor. Laura, thanks so much for joining us and for sharing your discoveries.
You're welcome, and I hope I see you in London soon.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced by Tim Tatton, Kaz Murrah-Hall, and Donna Bardsley at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington. Affiliate relations are by Sheila Gerzoff. Website uploads are by Andrew Wakeling and Sherry Court. Our theme music is by Jerry Frank. You'll find more about our guests at ricksteves.com/radio. We'll see you next week with more Travel with Rick Steves.